To be an elite financial advisor, you need to exceed your clients' expectations whenever they meet with you. Unfortunately, most advisors are holding very average meetings. Years ago, I finally challenged myself to evaluate my meetings, and I realized they were very average at best. It was not until I unlocked the power of the whiteboard when the energy changed in the room, when I had clients saying, "This was a great meeting. This was more than I expected." I want to challenge you to start using a whiteboard today. Stand up in the room, teach, coach, educate, and exceed your clients' expectations. Check out gobeelite.com to see 10 videos that I've made of me whiteboarding. 5 of those videos are me teaching advisors how to whiteboard, and 5 of those videos are videos I've sent directly to my clients. This is a very easy way to improve your communication skills, but also to attract your clients, to attract new prospects, and to exceed their expectations. Go check it out. Hector, welcome to the podcast, my friend.
Thank you for having me, Sten. It's exciting to be here with you.
You bet. Now, I've appreciated our conversations up to this point, hearing about your background. So all of our listeners, advisors, financial industry folks, but I'd love to jump in by you kind of giving us your path, because most likely everybody listening has interacted with one of your organizations at some point. Maybe didn't know you were running it, but love some of that background, and then we can kind of dive into some other topics.
I'd love to do that. So I'll start by probably something that people don't know is that I started my career in sales with ADP, the payroll HR company, and you've probably been paid by them, but may not always know them in front and center. So I started with ADP. I was with them for 10 years. But ADP at one point spun off a company called Bysys. And Bysys was at the time a third-party administrator. They did some other things as well. But they started buying brokerage general agencies, BGAs, in the life insurance space. And the president of ADP, Russ Fradin, became the CEO of Bysys. And so there were a few folks from ADP and a couple from Pru and other folks in the industry came over to Bysys to essentially put together all these acquisitions and became what was eventually known as Crump. So I was with Bysys Crump for my first 16 years in the industry. So started in distribution. I was a chief sales officer for Crump for 16 years. So was in and around carriers since 2005. From Crump, I was asked to take over the life insurance business for Equitable. And Equitable had gone public in 2018. And so I had an opportunity to take over the manufacturing side and the distribution side. So everything life at Equitable was me for the first for 3 years. And I think to me, one of the biggest things about that was what a great learning experience that was to be on the manufacturing side and develop solutions for today's problems and for tomorrow's problems. And I think it was the impetus for me to think about if what we do makes a difference in clients' lives, and it does, the products we create make a difference in clients' lives, why not go somewhere where we could do more for more people? And there's no better platform to do that with John Hancock. So I joined John Hancock about 8 months ago now, and been running their life business since then.
You feel like you're settled in?
You know, still learning where the bathroom is, but I'm settled in. We've got a great team here. You know, somebody asked me, you know, what made you come to John Hancock? And I just sort of shared that with you here a second ago. But what have you found out, you know, in the last 8 months that maybe surprised you? And I was always, like I said, I've been in and around the carriers for so long that I knew of them as a client of theirs. But one of the great things that I'm seeing while I'm here behind the four walls, and it was the same at Equitable, was a passionate team that's trying to deliver solutions for advisors so that they can in turn deliver for their clients. So I may not be settled in, but I will tell you this. We've got an incredible team here that is helping me along the way. And we're shoulder to shoulder trying to bring the solutions to advisors.
That's exciting. So I'm curious to get your feedback. What I love about conversations I get to have is everybody listening wouldn't get to hang out with Hector and sit in a room across the table and kind of pick your brain. So that's what I want to give to them today. I've found with advisors, you're kind of in one of a few camps. You're like, I just do investments. I don't really even talk about insurance. Or potentially you're like, hey, mostly what I do is insurance. That's my specialty. And there's an emerging group of kind of more financial planning based, advice based advisors that can have conversations about both. They may be the expert in both, but they're bringing it up to the client. What are you seeing with advisors that struggle to get into the insurance, that don't really even talk about it? How would you coach advisors on insurance? If it's maybe not their expertise, but it needs to be brought up.
Yeah, so I think a couple of things. So you mentioned that there's this sort of hybrid advisor that's coming up, because what they're realizing, and I think COVID sort of showed that this is the case. So first, if you get to know me, you'll realize that having started in sales, I lean towards distribution. I lean towards advisors. I think advisors sit at the intersection of the most complicated decisions that clients have to make. And in times where I've been had the ability to speak to advisors and or to people that were asking similar questions, I always think to myself that it's not about this or that, but rather how this and that fit together to drive an outcome for a client. So I think if advisors are client-centric, and I have not yet met many advisors that don't put the client in the middle of it all. And when they think about that and you say the client's at the middle and solving a problem for this client is what matters, then the question is, how do you string together the best financial instruments or otherwise to make that solution palpable, to make that solution one that they can reach? So I think having the client in the middle is the one thing that I think is differentiating an advisor today versus the specialist that you had back then that did just life insurance, or I just gather assets, or I just do X, Y, or Z. You're having somebody that realizes, hey, I sit at the intersection of these important decisions. I've got to be a generalist, at least in these areas that I don't know well, have connectivity to people and or companies that can deliver those solutions to go alongside with my planning. Most advisors excel at the accumulation, at building wealth for their clients. Where a lot of advisors struggle is that off-ramp into where does protection fit into this all-weather portfolio? And if I am going to make it an all-weather portfolio, how does risk play into that? Yeah. And I think, to me, that's what the hybrid tomorrow's advisor is going to look like, is one that could sort of surround the client's journey from accumulation. And now that you've helped them build that wealth, how do you now protect that? And then how do you turn the spigot on and make sure that money lasts?
Yeah, I look back at my story and I look into some meetings when I was in the investment side and I was like, oh, this is exciting and the markets are fun. And, you know, insurance is kind of this thing that we maybe have to talk about towards the end of the meeting, that based on my training and the environment I was in, when I talk about investments, I'd kind of be excited. And then like whenever I'd get to insurance, it would kind of like fall off. And I reflect on like, I'm sure the people are feeling that energy, that it's just as important, maybe not as exciting at times, but as we try to coach advisors, it's like, how do you keep the plan, energy around the whole plan, which insurance can be dynamic and exciting. But you are talking about death, less about making money in the market, you know, transferring assets beyond. What have you learned? Because this was Crump. I mean, for me, for years, Crump was the group I called and said, hey, I don't know what I'm doing. Help me here.
Yeah.
How would you kind of coach advisors on that?
Yeah, so I think, so first I would just say that as an industry, we're doing everything we can, because it has not been easy for advisors to sort of navigate that road. You know, there's always this idea of having to underwrite the risk, right? So you could adequately charge premium for the risk that you're taking on. That's what we have to do as manufacturers. But how do you make that process resemble the way that advisors and engage with other financial instruments? So we as an industry, I'll start by saying, have to be aware of that. And you'll see that not just John Hancock, but all of us are taking steps in that direction to create a better journey so that when you do need to navigate, and you will have to navigate on the risk conversation, then at least engaging and consuming a life insurance product, an annuity product, is going to reflect the way that you leverage other financial instruments. But I do think that to keep that sort of from going from, oh my gosh, this exciting conversation around accumulation and building wealth to, well, what if I die? I think it's around, what is it that the portfolio is for? Like, what is it that we're building here? Because most of the time, it's not just about building wealth, but there's a total plan that says, here's the reason why this all matters. And all of a sudden, this protection aspect of it, or even tax-preferred treatment of the inside buildup that could be a supplemental retirement income, all these things fit into the story and the outcome. And if the advisor can help the client focus on that outcome, the journey becomes worth it. And that's, I think, what it boils down to, is just if you focus around the outcome and how the risk part, the protection part, or even the preferred tax treatment of inside buildup, how that might play a role in the outcome and building what I like to call an all-weather portfolio that depending on where you are, you don't have to so much think about liquidity risk because you've got this protection here that allows you to tap into that cash value if you needed it. So there's just ways in which you could focus on that outcome that I think make the journey more palatable. But that doesn't excuse the life insurance industry for making it better than it is today.
Yeah, I do think there's like an ease of business piece. I know some of my buddies that are heavy in the insurance, they have teams built for it. They're used to underwriting. There's been times in my career where I was less insurance focused and more AUM, and it's pretty easy to send a DocuSign, open an account, and roll something over. I mean, you're talking, you know, 3 to 7 days. Yeah. Where I've been in times where insurance underwriting for long-term care, like sometimes the ease of business is such a challenge. What are you seeing? Again, you guys have to be profitable, and now we have tech coming. What do you see from like a ease of experience for the advisor as the business owner? How do you see that changing?
So I think that I think it's rapidly changing. And I think whether it's AI, whether it's other digital assets that are out there, I think you've already started to see access to activity data, EHRs, like electronic health records. There's things that are happening today, and it's rapidly moving, that are going to allow us to create this a journey that may not be exactly what you just described, but it's closely going to reflect what you just described. It's not going to be tomorrow, but you're going to see that companies, I mean, reinsurers are talking about it, carriers are talking about it. How do you leverage the data that exists today to be less invasive at the client, at the point of attack with the client, so advisors don't have to engage in that conversation? And then that proverbial black hole that advisors have talked about is starting to really, really narrow because of some of the access to information that we have. So I think you're going to see a lot more innovation. You're already seeing it. I think about John Hancock and just the journey they took 10 years ago. They completely revolutionized the way that life insurance is owned. You know, when you think about life insurance, generally speaking, it's for when you die, the people that matter most, the business that matters most. There's a plan that's going to be okay because of the planning that you've done and the protection that you've provided. John Hancock said, well, why wouldn't we change that? And listen, besides the people that love you the most, who else would be more interested in you living longer than your life insurance company? Vitality came aboard and said, instead of hoping you live longer, how about we partner with you so you could live a longer, healthier, better life? And that's where Vitality came from. And I only bring that up because that's the sort of innovation that you'll see, not just at John Hancock, but specifically here and other companies that are going to narrow the gap between where we are today, where we were yesterday, and where I think we'll be tomorrow, which again, is going to get a lot closer to the financial instruments that you all are used to bringing to your clients.
Do you see a day in the near future where, I know for advisors, sometimes like the hardest part should be educating and getting a client to say, yes, I'm ready to take action. And sometimes that's just the start, you know, of medical records and the whole thing. Is there a version of some death benefit or some type of policy someday where it's like you're sitting with a client and it's within 30 minutes, they could have something in place? I remember that floating around. I know it's easier said than done. What do you see coming in like the next 5 years, potentially?
It exists today. You see companies taking a shot at term insurance as an example, face amounts that are lower, that could better instant decision. You know, what you see today is a blend between the risk that they're willing to take on at a certain premium that they could approve right there on the spot. But I do think we're getting closer and closer to being able to do it, that instant decision, or I'll call it in-session decisioning. So while you're in there and you press a button and say buy now, almost like Amazon, and you can take in the product, you could issue the product, and then you could get your policy e-delivered. So we are getting closer to those days, or to that day, I should say. But you do see instances of that today with term insurance specifically. And I think you're going to start to, and there's been some inroads on the permanent side as well. But I think we're getting closer and closer to a day where you're going to see that in-session point of sale decisioning, where either the consumer is filling out their information and closing that case on behalf of the advisor who sent them a link, so to speak, or the advisor doing it in session with the client. That is happening today more than you could imagine. I think it's going to, the bar is going to raise where you're going to start to do it at higher face amounts versus the smaller face amounts.
Hey, friend, this is Andy. Pardon the interruption, but first I want to say, hey, thank you so much for being a faithful listener to our show. And second, I want to tell you about something that we have never done before that we're doing now, which is we are taking deposits for our event. So our next event in person is not until October of 2025. So we've decided to take deposits now for that event. It will sell out. We sold out our April event, and we have a huge gap between now and our next event. So if you go to howtocharge.live.com, that's howtocharge.live.com right now, you can put a deposit down, hold your seat, and then pay the rest later in the year. So we will hopefully see you at our next event. You won't want to miss it. And now back to our show.
Yeah, I'm thinking about a lot of advisors I coach and probably a lot listening if they were had a practice like mine where it was very AUM heavy, you know, having some kind of financial planning conversations, but insurance was this thing. It just felt like we'll just tell them where they can go to get it, but it's such a laborsome process and we're not experts in it that it was more distracting for our business than productive. So over time, I've had to shift to where I need to always have experts that I can get really good at asking the questions to identify the need, but in order not to ignore that need for the client, because I know it's important. I came from the insurance world. Yeah. I have to put people around me that I can pull in to help execute it. I even pay a monthly fee to help people handle the underwriting for me. Like as a business owner, instead of staffing up to try to be the financial planner and the insurance person, while still believing it's that important, I had to put something around me to satisfy that. So for everybody listening, I think that's step one is don't ignore life insurance. It's so important, but don't feel like you have to become an expert and staff up for it overnight, because there are resources out there where they are built to help advisors fill that need without all of the extra work.
Sten, that's a great point. You know, for those of the listeners that are either registered or even if they're just an agent, it's almost our moral obligation, but it's certainly a fiduciary obligation to present the client not just with ways to build wealth, but also how to protect that in the event that the unfortunate happens or that the certain happens at a later point in time. So I think it's our responsibility. But to your point, I think just that piece there that you just mentioned, you said, I'm not the expert, but I'm going to surround myself with people who are, so that you're not reacting to the protection conversation, but rather you're bringing it up with confidence because, you know, number one, it's my responsibility to do this. And number two, this is a conversation we should have and there's people here to help me do that. I think that's, if advisors start to do that more often, it's going to bridge the gap between now and when some of the ease of doing business continues to expand. But at the very least, if what you just described, if everybody were to do that, we'd be bringing these solutions to more and more people. And I'll tell you, that's what we need to do. We need to start thinking about how to bring these to more and more people, because it is a one product that, you know, when you think about whether it's real estate, that generations to come will benefit because of the planning that you as advisors are bringing to your clients.
Yeah, I had a client 2 weeks ago, husband passed away unexpectedly, and they had forgot they had a 20-year term policy in place that I'd helped him with years ago. I think it's $500,000 she didn't know she had. And that's now her being able to buy a house in the town where her kids are now that she's alone. And so I think earlier in my career, before I had delivered death claims, there was this, I believe that it's important, but man, when you deliver a check to somebody and it shifts their whole financial plan from, hey, you might be able to make it to, hey, you're comfortable and you're good. I think some conviction comes from that over time.
Yeah.
What has been your kind of your business experience? Maybe I'll backtrack real quick and say this. As an advisor, I had to think about how can I bring up insurance as a financial planner or advisor that doesn't feel like I'm selling insurance? Because when I came up in the insurance world, it was, hey, you need life insurance, you need DI. Like I went right to the product that they're missing versus over time, I've had to develop like a whiteboard where I talk about there's two types of risk. There's covered risk and uncovered risk.
Mm-hmm.
And for everybody listening, if there's any hesitancy in you about like, I just don't want to talk about life insurance, or I don't want to be the life insurance guy or gal, yeah. I think there's a higher level conversation to start with that's like risk and what it can do to your plan. And then eventually you can get to the product. But similar on the investment side, we don't open up by being like, hey, you should buy this mutual fund. We're talking about wealth and what it can help you accomplish. And then we get to the product. What has been your experience? And is it the same as mine where the insurance industry in general, we kind of jump to products pretty quick and we're not educating as much? Or is that just me?
No. You're right. I think a lot of times people become experts. And by the way, I think everybody should try to understand the products that they represent or the products that they're positioning. I think it's important to know how it works. In my view, I think it's harder though. And we, as an industry, we have to be better about making sure that advisors understand how our products work to solve the problem they're trying to solve. So that's, I think, the biggest thing. It's not just, let me tell you about this Index Universal Life product, but let me tell you about this gap that you have in your planning and some of the risks that your portfolio has today without a protection product. Let me show you how this Index Universal Life covers that issue, right? So the question is not so much the product, but the portfolio construction, the way that you're optimizing their opportunity to get to that outcome that I spoke about. So I think by and large, even when I was at ADP, feature dumping was easy, right? Because you could memorize some things, you could sound really smart when you said it,
yeah.
But you're selling to a problem that they may or may not have, or they may or may not feel. So I think if you put the client in the center, which is how we started this conversation, Sten, and I know through my conversation with you, you do this all the time. If the client's outcomes and their goals are at the center of it, then the idea of figuring out how that product is going to fill that hole or fill that gap, making sure the client understands the gap they have, now all of a sudden it becomes an easy, like, how do we solve for that problem? Because I don't want to have this exposure. I don't want to outlive my retirement. I don't want, like, they're starting to be vocal about the things that are concerning them, and then say, well, here are the options we have, right? We could self-insure, we could insure, to your point about covered and uncovered.
Yeah, I love the idea of getting buy-in up front on like an agreed upon outcome. I've never heard feature dumping. I love that. Or if it's a back dumping, you know, illustration dump, like if it feels like you're just beating them over the head with features, which again, on the surface don't sound bad, but you haven't mutually agreed upon, like, wait, what are we trying to solve or what's the outcome? Yeah, to a consumer, I'd just be like, I don't even know what you're saying.
I'd have to share this. So when I was at ADP, BlackBerry came out. So we were all using Palm Pilot. I love my Franklin Planner. And I remember BlackBerry came out, and the salesperson came in and was talking about the BlackBerry, and they talked about emailing, you know, and they talked about the calendar, all that stuff that BlackBerry could do. It was fantastic. I thought, this is really cool. Didn't get it. Months later, I was out in the field with our head of operations, and he had a BlackBerry. I said, oh, you got one of those BlackBerries? He said, yeah, I get to spend more time with my kids.
Oh, nice.
I said, well, what do you mean you get to spend more time with your kids? He's like, well, what are you going to do when you get home? And I told him, I'm like, I'm going to go home, eat dinner, spend time with my kids, and then I got to go back and look at my email. He's like, so you're going to put them to bed as quickly as you can so you could go look at your emails that you missed today. I know what I got today. I'll spend a lot of time with my kids. I had a BlackBerry within a week. So my point is that what mattered to me was what the BlackBerry was going to let me do,
yeah,
and the outcome that was going to be driven, not the features that it had. So I always use that when I'm talking to salespeople, advisors, to just remember that outcome piece. The client will tell you what they need. And generally speaking, you all are sophisticated enough, or to your point, surround yourself with people who are, to bring those solutions to them.
So before we wrap up, I'd love to kind of lean more into your business experience now and kind of what you've learned about yourself. Are there times where you look back and you're like, man, professionally, I wish I would have handled this different. I acted more out of fear than faith, of kind of trusting that people were looking out for me. What have you learned professionally that you would want to share with everybody?
So first, I stay close to my roots. I remember what it means to be an advisor. I remember what it means to be in sales. I remember that you're sitting with a client and trying to solve a problem for that client. And so by the time we see an application, whether that was at Crump or whether that's at a carrier, don't ever lose sight that there was a lot that took to get this application in the door. Honor that application and do everything we can to make sure that we deliver that outcome. So that's the first thing, is never get too far away from what it is that we're trying to accomplish. Premium matters and growth matters. But the number of policies we place, loosely, means the number of people that we're covering, the number of families that we're making sure are better off, and giving the advisor the opportunity to drive those solutions. And so I try to stay as close to that as possible. But I think the one thing that I would say is that I could spend a whole lot of time talking about this is having gone from ADP, which was not in the life insurance space. We were, you know, I think towards the end of my career there, we were in the workers' comp and in the health insurance space, the voluntary benefit space. But coming into the insurance space, and then from the distributor side, going into the carrier manufacturing side, is having the humility to know what you don't know and vocalize that you don't know. You know, I made it, it was around the time that I joined, 2005, that I said to myself, I cannot leave a room with the same level of intelligence as I walked in. I should be asking questions. Shame on me if I don't learn something when I'm in here. And so be humble enough to say, I just don't understand. And it really was put front and center when I when I was asked to lead the Equitable Life business, it wasn't something that I had done before. So if I came in knowing the answers, what sort of knowledge, what sort of wisdom would I have missed out on because I didn't ask the questions? And to your point, what you do, surrounded myself with people that were willing to help along the way for one outcome, drive solutions that are getting an advisor's hand so that they could solve problems for their clients. And so just humble enough to ask questions and say when you don't understand so that, you know, if we all did that, we'd all leave a little bit smarter, a little bit better, and a little bit closer to helping drive good outcomes.
Did you have like some key mentors that picked you out? Did you pursue mentors? How did that work in your career so far?
So I'm not doing this because I'm on with you, but I will tell you that when I first came, I've had incredible leadership ever since I joined the life insurance space. I think there's a lot of advisors, whether they were MDRT, Court of the Table, they were just incredible humans. And so there's been a lot of folks that have sort of altered the trajectory. But I bring up your and my meeting because Paul Appiana, early in my career, when I came in 2005, he was at Met. And I don't know what it was, but right from the beginning, he was one of those folks that took time out of his schedule. We were at different companies. I'm at Crump. He's at the time Bices, and he was at Met, took the time to sort of nudge me along the way. And then I've, you know, Rob Carney, who was the president of Crump, and Brian Winnikoff, who was the CEO, both of those were very instrumental and sort of early in my career to sort of some of the things that I'm saying are conversations that I've had or learned from them.
Yeah, I found business can be lonely. Being an advisor can be lonely. You just kind of put your head down on the island and try to make it work. I think there were times in my career where I was more open to mentorship. I maybe put off some energy of like, hey, I'm curious and I'm humble. And I think there were times where I did not put off a curious, humble vibe, and I probably missed out on some opportunities for that. And so I think going back to your be curious, ask questions, I think there's a posture we can put off that welcomes people like that. And then there's a posture we can put off where it's like, hey, I got to fake it. I don't want people to judge me. I have it all together. And you're probably less likely to find yourself in the room with those people if you do that.
Yeah, I'll tell you, that's one of those reasons. And I just only bring up Brooks Tingle, who's our CEO. And I mentioned 10 years ago what vitality was. This was born from his curiosity and his resolve that the way we do life insurance should be different. But he's curious. He asks questions. And so he challenges us all to do the same thing. It's one of the reasons why, you know, I had known him since the early 2000s, but I'm excited to be alongside him because like Paul, like Rob and Brian, who I just mentioned, Brooks is a sort of inspiring guy that says we should all be asking questions. We should all be asking why not and how can we? And what would need to be true in order for us to be, you know, in this sort of rarefied air that we're all going for?
Yeah, I think the side effect of curiosity is you're going to feel something most likely. It might be I'm going to defend what I'm currently doing, or I'm going to be scared of what I just found out because what that means for me next. But I think the benefit, the doors that open are always, you're always better off even if it doesn't feel like it initially. And I run into a lot of advisors that more energy is spent kind of defending what they're doing now versus being open to new things. And so for everybody listening, if insurance, because this is part of my story, that's why I wanted to spend time with you, is it was part of my story. I knew I believed in it. And then I kind of like drifted away and focused on other things. And then I kind of came full circle. And I'm really grateful for my journey in the business of like heavy insurance to heavy investments to then kind of arrive in the middle of like, this is so equally important. I need to learn how to communicate it in a way that gives it the attention it deserves. But I don't have to be the person that takes it over the finish line necessarily, because sometimes that felt like a whole separate business. And so for everybody listening, I challenge you to kind of audit yourself. Like, how do you see insurance? Do you believe in it? Do you know how to communicate it? And then finally, what is your system in place to help deliver it?
And to your point, if you're not the expert, if we're curious and ask questions because we know what it'll mean to the total construction of this portfolio that you want to do what it needs to do for that client, then you'll ask the question and you'll find the answer from whether it's one of the manufacturers, whether it's one of the broker general agencies, whether it's people that you surround yourself with. But just understanding that it's a necessity and that it's not always the right answer. Right, but this and that can work if it drives better outcomes.
Well said, Hector. I appreciate you, brother.
I appreciate you. Thank you for having me.